Interview session number 2 with James. April 5th, 2008. Copyright 2008. Wingmakers. All rights reserved. I'm Mark Kempel, and I'm sitting here with James, the once anonymous creator of the Wingmakers, Lyricus, and Event Temple's websites. I say once because I guess you're still anonymous, but now that you're sitting here with me, it seems less so, assuming that we share these interviews with the public. If you're listening to this and you haven't heard part one, which we recorded just a little earlier, you might want to start with that part first because it puts these interviews in context. And I guess in the interest of not wanting to repeat myself, I'm not going to do that here. So partly in the interest of time and partly because I don't know if I'd do as good a job since I don't have my notes in front of me here. I've switched. So anyway, I'll skip the background information and get right to the questions, if that's okay with you, James.
Yes, no, okay. That's fine, Mark.
One of the things I'm curious about, and I suspect our listeners are as well, is to know more about the world religions and how they relate to Wingmakers, if they do at all.
Anytime we speak about world religions, I'm not sure how to respond because I don't want to insult anyone, nor do I wish to make comparisons that are subjectively unfair, which leaves little room for statements of any kind. All I will say is that people can find their higher selves and activate their higher connections to spirit and God through most of the religious and spiritual movements on earth. There is no monopoly on the access points to spirit. And to the degree they don't feel they, meaning the people, this higher connection is emerging from their study, then they're probably better served to try something new, trusting that their higher self will guide them to that which resonates with their innate feeling of the truth. If you go to an orchestral performance, at the beginning the musicians are tuning their instruments, trying to find harmony. In a similar way, we are made by the same creator, but our instruments are in different tuning codes, and we're trying to find the point of harmonization. We're all tuned differently through our experience, genetic predispositions, education, and yes, I suppose religion and cultural conditioning play a decisive role as well. World religions compete more than they seek to harmonize, and as I've said before, the key is activation of the connection between the ego personality, the higher self, and the animating spirit that flows between them. Once this activation occurs, what religion you are is quite academic, much the same way it doesn't matter what your citizenship is when you visit outer space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Interesting analogy. The question I see in the subtext of the email linked to religion is the confusion that all of these different spiritual paths have on the individual as they try to, figure out which one is best for them.
Yes. Yes, I understand. But, mm-hmm. but seekers are yet looking outside themselves. They seek what they sense they lack within, in part because religion and culture tell them that they lack this ability and require intermediaries like priests and ministers, rabbis, or spiritual teachers to find their way. The pathways of spirit only appear confusing from the inside looking out, and this is because the materials that are strewn before the typical seeker are confusing. One path tells you you're a sinner, another path tells there's no such thing, one path tells you to breathe this way with this posture, another says pray in this form, one path says the end is near, another says we're just born in the spirit of God, it's a time of new beginnings. So can all of these things be true at the same time? It becomes equally confusing as you enter the scientific domain. not too long ago, there was magic and wonder in the world. And then Newton and others came along, and the mechanistic universe was unveiled. And magic left our culture and stood on the fringes like an orphan. And now, like the prodigal son, magic has returned in the form of quantum physics. On the one hand, religion defined magic in the formulations of its leaders so as to manipulate the masses. On the other hand, science, eschewing magic, distilled our universe to the nuts and bolts of a mechanism in which our specialness as a species was just sort of like taken out of the equation. For example, we're 99% the same as an ape. We're not the center of the universe, and so forth. All of these theses or points of view, world views, influenced, and they became larger, and we became smaller, less significant. In a sense, the quantum world came to our rescue, as we became aware of just how little we know about the universe. This was an activation for the species as a whole that most people do not truly understand, because humanity was beaten down with a mechanical, uncaring universe and an invisible God. But then we discovered how we are all connected. The basic mechanics were anything but mechanical. They were magical, indeed inexplicable. But that is the world of subatomic energies, the frequencies of light and sound in which we live. I realize I got off track a bit, but the impression I want to leave is that I have great sympathy for the seeker and their confusion. It's well found. Yeah.
So what should people do in the midst of their confusion? I mean, what should they do to get clear?
The best place to start when trying to begin again is to simplify. This is a literate world where words rule the mind. The spirit behind the words is key. It is more important than the words. Most seekers draw confusion to themselves because they compare the words written or spoken by spiritual teachers, or worse yet, they compare the interpretations of the words from spiritual teachers. Language was invented to facilitate trade and barter, commerce, and later culture. Language of our world is a third-dimensional construct that is misleading and imperfect. So with words, be careful. I'll give you an example. I can tell you the core truth in as little as two sentences. Here it goes. Just as the sun is the presence of God in our collective universe, you are the presence of God in your local universe. You are a light being in a universe of equal beings, and each one is just as essential to the whole. So, you see, in these two sentences, I've told you the seeds of truth from which all other wisdom arises. There is nothing to be confused about in this truth unless, of course, you fall back on your historical knowledge. So, if you are confused, you must bear some responsibility for your confusion as it comes to you out of comparison. Take the first sentence. Just like the sun is the presence of God in our collective universe. What does it mean? The sun and God are one and the same? Well, for many this would be heresy. In some periods of our history you would have been killed for saying this. And yet, it's the truth. Though it's more complex than simply saying the sun and God are identical. So the words themselves begin to confound truth. So to simplify your own truth, you need to have a framework from which your beliefs arise. The framework of Lyricus is to live a love-centered life by expressing the six art virtues to all within your local universe. As you do this, you become a conductor of your emotional system, and you become the presence of God in your world. It's a very simple framework, and one that springs forth from the most ancient of worlds, yet there's really been no evolution provided to it. It's not undergone interpretations. It has not been embroidered by any religious institution. It is not owned by anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this might be a good time to ask a very frequent question about Lyricus.
Very well. But let me add something to your last question first. The world is not without paradox and complexity. It has plenty of both. The seeker in today's world is being overwhelmed by many, many stressors. The economy, their job, their family, their relationships, even their roles as mother, father, daughter, son, or husband, or wife. These stressors inhabit the body, and the nervous system is aroused by them, and not in a good way. The nervous system and endocrine systems, coupled to the heart, produce the network connection to the higher frequencies. In other words, they are your internal network, and connection to the external network, the organizing fields of spirit intelligence. If you have too much noise in your body and emotional system, and by noise I mean stress that is built up and is endangering the sensitivity of your connection, remember that the practice of the Six Heart Virtues is a method to release this noise or stress. There are many, many techniques that will help, even technologies, and it's important that the individual discover what works for them. Doc Childeray, the founder of Heart Math, is the preeminent teacher on the subject and one I recommend without hesitation. Seekers are often in search of the escalating complexity because the esoteric is seductive. If I see someone who is practicing the Six Heart Virtues to the best of their ability, they are, in my view, a greater master on earth than the one who quotes the highest formulations of spirit or speaks the elegance of Jesus or Muhammad or Krishna or Buddha or practices meditation every day, but then radiates discordant behaviors or thoughts. The universe has an incentive system. It's called evolution, and so we understandably look at those things that have evolved into sophisticated techniques or organizations, and we imbue them with greater importance than those things that have not evolved and are simple, even innocent in comparison. But the Six Heart Virtues in living a love-centered life, while disconnected from the evolutionary track of spiritual knowledge, are paradoxically among the most potent forms of truth for this particular time in humanity's evolution.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because I get letters from people who acquaint me with some of the more esoteric writings out there, like the Arantxa book or Keys of Enoch, some of the Alice Bailey stuff, and at least those are a couple examples that come to mind. And they have some really great insights in them, but they also leave me feeling a bit uncertain what to do next, with the knowledge itself. What do you see as the key thing a seeker new to these materials can do to gain a sense of conviction, I guess I'll call it that, that they're on the right path?
Yes, well, the word religion is derived from the Latin words relink. So to relink into the higher self is the esoteric meaning of the term religion. So the seeker is attempting to relink into their higher self, which has been put in the shade of their ego personality, whose voice is sporadically heard and even less so acted upon. Thus, the seeker of truth must demand or feel a sense of reconnection with their higher self and the animating spirit that flows within it, and then act upon it. It's not enough to hear the beautiful thoughts of one's higher self, or feel the power of its feelings, or the creative urges of its mind. The human instrument must come into alignment, and reposition the ego personality to its rightful place, adjusted in the knowledge of its role as a facilitator of spirit within the human domain. When the seeker sees these adjustments and feels the relinking into their higher self, they will have a sense of conviction that they're on the right path. Remember, I said earlier that it's a psychological process. It's the feeling of relinking to one's own divinity. It's the sense of empowered co-creativity with one's higher self and its unalterable connection to the fields of spirit that make possible its eternal connection to individuality and oneness. and an alternating, like a sine wave, like a wave of existence. This is the power you hold within you, and every authentic seeker is called to this very special and very personal mission.
So you look at this, this as a mission of the individual.
Yes, it is, in every sense of the word, a responsibility of the individual to seek out their higher self and come into alignment with the higher fields of their source. And I use this term responsibility not as a thing imposed upon the seeker from an outside source, but rather a recollection of their purpose for incarnating as a human on this planet at this time. Once they fulfill this responsibility, they will decide, quite of their own accord, what their mission is and with whom they wish to work with. Much of this goes on beneath the conscious awareness of the seeker. In some ways, they feel like they're caught up in a current that, like a riptide, that pulls them from the safety of the shoreline. The shoreline represents their past as an ego personality, and the currents are spirit. And once the seeker comes into alignment with their higher self, they will be pulled by this current and positioned appropriately to fulfill their mission.
Is the mission different for everyone, or is it pretty much the same?
It's really both. Every individual seeker, as they awaken to their inmost spirit and feel the currents of a love-centered life, is pulled into very specific situations in which their energetics can be utilized by spirit and the grand awakening of humanity. This does not mean that that every moment is a contribution to this mission, but overall, as you look at the mosaic of a life, let's say a course of a month's time, the contribution is proffered and the awakening is brought a little closer, made a tiny bit more tangible and magnetic to all those who remain asleep. At the collective scale, there are different phases of awakening. There are those who are just awakening, who are seeking their purpose and trying to integrate the two worlds into a sensible composition. There are those who are in deep slumber in their ego personalities and cultural confinements. And there are those who are partially awakened but are manipulated by outside influences to remain with the sleeping masses. And there are those who are awakened and know with deep conviction and the commitment of divine love that their primary mission is to activate and rekindle all of those in the aforementioned categories so they can all join the grand awakening. Now, and this is important, the mission is not one of join the enlightened crowd and be happy, nor is it, you poor people who live in ignorance of the glory of God, I will help you awaken. This is not about preaching the good news to the sinners of the world. Those who slumber are not sinners. They are not bad people, nor are they lower in standing than you or me. If you've ever seen a fish who inadvertently swam into a shallow tide pool and is now trapped, there is an instinct to help them return to the ocean. And this is the instinct we have, and nothing more. The fish held in the tide pool is still the same fish. It has the same powers and needs. It's simply trapped in the confinements of the tide pool, and that diminishes its ability to be a fish.
Yeah, you know, I get a lot of email from people, and I should add that when I say I get a lot of email, it's really intended for you. Yeah, but the sentiment is a bit edgy, in that the person is frustrated that their mission or purpose seems, I'll say, mundane. At least that's the impression I get from reading the stuff. It's kind of caught up, as you just put it, in a very small tide pool, or at least that's their perception. What would you say to them?
Well, this is a very common problem for people, because they feel the expanding grids and the larger purpose of their life, and yet they confront traffic snarls or sick children or making their next mortgage payment or the ripples of a relationship gone bad. All of these things impinge on their perception of their purpose, because in part they feel the mundane and the divine clashing in their lives. They don't necessarily see the two worlds as connected in any meaningful way, but they are. Have you ever seen a film that is very dark, even depressing in its darkness, but when the light comes into the film, it's very bright, very fulfilling?
Yeah, you know, my wife and I love the HBO show called Carnival, and or Carnival, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's about as dark as it gets, but because it's set in the Great Depression, when people shine, it really comes across from an emotional level, and I think that's a good example of what you mean.
Yes. Yes, though I haven't seen the movie you've mentioned, it can be a very powerful technique in storytelling and filmmaking to use the contrast of darkness to reveal the light with more fullness and depth. And life does this as well, you see. The darkness isn't necessarily a huge event or evil person as it's often depicted in film and stories. It can be the accumulation of hundreds of small things. But however it arises, it creates the conditions whereby you can use the six heart virtues and shed your light into the darkness of the times and into your local universe. The irony is that this is the purpose we came here to undertake. This is our mission, in effect. And yet most people find that the mundane distractions of life interfere with their lofty missions, when indeed they reveal them. Again, I want to add that I understand that this can be a difficult thing to see in this light. But if the six heart virtues were ever flowing and easy to transmit, how would you develop your skills? How would you strengthen your determination to send these virtues amongst your local universe? How would you help in the situations of crisis or difficulty? How would your mission remain a vital element of your life over the changing times? And how would you understand the situation of others and feel genuine compassion? When the darkness enters your world, remember this is the time to use the heart virtues, to exercise them above all other times, as they will stand out. They will reveal your grace and that of the one you truly represent.
Yeah, I've heard you use the term local universe several times today, and it seems like a new term to me. I think I know what you mean when you say it, but could you define it just to be sure?
Yes. One's local universe is the dimensional field that the individual is in moment to moment. For example, my local universe shifted many times just today as I was at home in New York organizing for my trip. Then drove to an airport, boarded a plane, entered another airport, met you, and now I'm sitting here in your office in Minneapolis. My local universe embraces every one of those spaces or environments. Each has its own energetic field that is the composite of a few people, or in some cases, like the airport, thousands of people. I can feel this composite field, sense the frequencies, or I can choose to turn down my sensitivity so I can focus more internally. I can also choose to enhance the composite energetic field through my behavior, thoughts, or feelings. Certain environments I have more control over than others. For example, if you work in an office building, you have some control over your personal office. But if you go to the cafeteria, you must blend or mesh with the composite field that exists there. So your local universe is wherever you are in the moment. And wherever that is, from a physical or geographic point of view, you are also present in other dimensions. And in these higher dimensions, you may shift your perception or awareness to a different local universe. The term local in this case only means it's your present focus of attention and energy. And this is important because it means we're not tethered to our physical geography. Wherever you are, in terms of your local universe, remember you are the presence of God and Spirit. You are like a sun within the sky of your environment, and this sun expresses light. but it also absorbs the informational codes or inputs of your local universe, and you can feel this absorption flowing into your soul, where it is processed with ease and positioned in coherence for your human instrument to make use of. There is a saying within the text of Liminal Cosmogony that is very appropriate here. Let your universe be the altar upon which the consciousness of spirit can descend. So in a way, your local universe is a portal through which the consciousness of spirit can enter your human domain. When I said earlier that my day included many geographical shifts, I didn't mention all of the internal shifts because partly they would be too numerous to mention, and partly because they are difficult to describe in words. As we say, it's like trying to put a costume on an angel. Does this answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks, by the way. I do want to return to my question about Lyricus, but as you were talking, something else popped into my mind and that I wanted to ask you about.
Yes, good. It's wise to be instinctual and follow the sudden impulses when they arrive from your heart. Spontaneity and living instinctually is all connected to a love-centered life, because only then can you live in the moment. I commend you for changing the conversation as your heart tells you. If we don't return to your list of questions, don't worry. It's only because our higher selves found a new way to engage, and this new way is always better than the old, predetermined way. When you operate in the currents of love, you can have confidence that you know just the right gesture, a word to say, or thought to hold, or virtue to express in the moment. There's no referential source you need to get approval from. Trust this.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for that insight. I appreciate that. I almost forgot my question now. I got so carried away by your compliment. Okay, back to it. The question's about kids. As you know, I have four of them, and it seems like there's just more pressure for kids than there was in my time growing up. What's your view of kids these days, and what prospects do they have? I guess what I mean is that the news isn't that bright. Things like global warming or energy shortages, food prices going up, water shortages, overpopulation, yada, yada. You know, when you look underneath the covers, there's a lot of potential problems looming.
Well, yeah, as you know, I haven't had the honor of raising children myself, so I'll begin my response with that admission. It's a complex set of questions you've raised. Let me start by saying that the children become entrained to their culture by the age of five. If their culture is fear-based, they themselves will generally, with few exceptions, learn this fear. This fear negates or diminishes trust, not only in the outside world or universe, but more importantly in themselves. This distrust expresses itself in very, very subtle characteristics, many of which are not even noticed by parents because they are generational. If children grow in fear, they tend to define themselves in terms of mortality, vulnerability, and isolation. These qualities strangle the expansiveness and scope of spirit that courses through their nervous system, their hearts and minds. Just one moment. Imagine if you had a very powerful vehicle to explore our planet, but you were given a blindfold to wear at the time you were born. The only oddity of this blindfold is that it's relatively transparent at birth. However, each month that goes by, the blindfold becomes more opaque. By the time you're able to really control this powerful vehicle, your blindfold is completely opaque. So now you can drive, but you can't see. Now you can explore, but you can only do so with extreme caution, because you don't really trust your perceptions of your local universe. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So So this is a metaphor for how many children feel as they mature. The power of their minds and egos becomes an instrument of division because they're taught to perceive the outside world as separate from themselves, while the spirit that lives within them, it beats a different message. It says, everything is one being. We are all connected in this universe. Our creator is benevolent and all-wise. The universe is our body. So there's this dichotomy that frustrates them because on the one hand, there is this mask they inherit from their culture that reduces everything it sees to disconnected parts for the purpose of comparison and analysis. On the other hand, the young person feels this unity and connection of spirit below the surface, sometimes in dreams, sometimes in daydreams, sometimes in art and story, sometimes in real life experience. Children and young adults can access the intuitive wisdom through the harmonization of their hearts and minds and a bold trust of their instincts, but the flair and glamour of the pop culture has a very strong magnetism. The access to their intuitive wisdom is seldom found once the child creates their social persona or protective mask that they wear, which gives them a corridor to retreat from the responsibility of higher awareness and purposeful energetic contribution. There are some children and young adults that break this conditioning of the social and cultural order, but not in high numbers or ratios. It's done by the few who have strong blueprints, missions, and an inner guidance to access this intuitive wisdom and utilize it for the grand awakening. Now, more to your point, the future is bright because the intelligence of the human race is being intensified in the coming years like never before. This awakening or access to the higher order intuitive knowledge is precisely what many of the children of today are here to reveal. With this access comes new inventions, innovative solutions, new ways in which humanity will solve the problems of energy, of poverty, of its governments, disease, and resource distribution. It's not to say that these problems will be overcome in a matter of a few years or when 2012 rolls around, all will be well with the world. No, it will not happen that way. It will happen more gradually. But the critical mass, the re-engineering of the human grids upon which we depend for our inner connections to spirit, these will be brought to a new level of creativity and cooperation, whereby the human and divine agendas come into a more, a new and higher harmony. And in this harmony, positive change will take hold.
Mm-hmm. What about all the prophesied disasters like nuclear wars or earth changes like floods and earthquakes and pole shifts, to name a few? Do these still loom in our future before the good times can roll, so to speak?
Well, there will continue to be calamities of various kinds. That's all part of the rhythm of nature and man. But it's not the events of the past that define our species or the direction in which we advance, so much as it's the purpose and intention we carry within our hearts and minds. So yes, there'll be wars and natural disasters that'll trail in the wake of humanity, and yes, it's only natural to presume that the best indicator of our future is our past, but that's not really the case. Prophecy often neglects the finer energies of the human heart and mind, and instead is informed by the mistakes and disastrous judgments that we see materialized in our history books. There's a primal coherence that makes possible the gradual appearance of the bridge between Creator and creation. As this bridge materializes in the coming years, it will widen so more and more people can cross it and feel the vibrational influences of their creator moment by moment, whenever they choose to touch in. It's like the lifting of a fog that separates one identity from another. And despite all the evidence to the contrary, the future of humankind is as bright as a star and even more enduring.
I think that was more positive than I expected.
Yes, well, I'm well aware that prophecy is a bit gloomy relative to humanity and Earth. But as I said, within the hearts and minds of ordinary people is the vision of what is to be. Even if we can't articulate it or grasp it with our minds, we nonetheless emit this vision and purpose, and it goes out as a powerful imprint, forming the future of humanity, like a great sculptor who wields galaxies like a hammer and chisel. The deepest motives of the human heart are not found in words, but rather behaviors and energetic or etheric transmissions to share love and light to all creatures. These are the muscles and limbs of the great sculptor or collective being. And the reason that this is so is because we are children of our Creator, whose vision and purpose is stored within each of us, expressing itself even when we seem far, far from spiritual, godly living. We cannot turn this off any more than our sun can choose not to shine. Food shortages will be an issue. Disease will be an issue. Wars will be an issue. And these are all elements that will pull humanity into a new grid or a new perspective relative to its values and behaviors. But the deepest motives, even when they're forgotten or ignored, remain as the collective signature of humanity. And these will be crystallized in our new institutions, our new technologies, our new leaders, and the new objectives of a united Earth. This is our destiny. It's not a whim of a few teachers or even angelic hosts. It's the innermost, pure, ancient voice of our hearts and minds in a chorus of love, where your identity is a cell and an evolving, ascending planetary organism. This organism lives and moves in the currents of love that fill the universe's light and sound frequencies from the highest to the lowest order.
Yeah, I think some of that may have gone over my head, but the great thing about audio is you can rewind it and listen a few more times, right?
Again, don't concern yourself with understanding everything you hear. Sometimes it's more valuable to not understand, but just feel the energy of what is said. This energy is more important, as it's often more activating than words and thoughts.
Okay, I'll do my best, but let's switch topics for a moment. I realize the heart has always been a factor in the Wingmaker's materials. It just seems like it's taken more of a center stage in the Event Temple site. Can you explain the reason for that, James?
Yes, it's true that the Event Temple is more focused on the heart center. But then the heart and mind are the key elements of the human instrument. And in the Wingmaker's materials, the mind was addressed more fully. And in the Event Temples, I suppose the focus was more squarely on the heart as a means to provide balance. But even in the poetry and art and music of the Wingmaker's materials, there is abundant reference to the heart and its central role in human activation and accessing the higher self. You see, the heart and mind are like two sides of the same coin. And by the way, when I say heart, I really mean the human emotional and intuitive system. And when I say mind, I really mean the consciousness of the sovereign individual, which includes the physical brain, a nervous system, and associative mind, the consciousness. So with those definitions out of the way, the heart is the portal of the human instrument that enables it to feel the currents of love that flow in and around every individual at all times. It's back to that antenna and transmitter I spoke about in our first session. It's really a sensory system that enables that feeling of connection to others and our mutual creator. The mind, however, is a powerful perceiver in many ways, though it kind of gets entangled with the ego personality and the social conditioning of the small story in which culture lives. so its power can be vastly diminished. The ideal is to have both the heart and mind operating in harmony as both receptors and transmitters to ensure a good balance between the incoming streams of energy and information and the outgoing transmissions. In the Wingmaker's terminology, this is akin to the Wholeness Navigator, that part that looks upon one's local universe and genuinely perceives it as a three-dimensional web connecting all life and wholeness. Now, the Event Temple's website and materials are really focused on presenting one angle on how an individual can live a love-centered life, but not for the reasons that it brings you spiritual knowledge or the security of good relationships or less stress, but rather to be responsible in helping humanity shift to a higher dimensional perspective amidst the tumultuous times ahead as we go through some of these birth pangs of a new humanity. It's important to understand the heart and mind are seamless. As I said before, two sides of the same coin, and that coin does not have a name to it. It's not definable as we sort out words to apply to it. Paradoxically, it's wordless where its definition matters, and where it doesn't matter, it's called things like soul, an integral self, a mortal consciousness and spirit. But all of these words pin it down inside a box the moment the word is used to describe it. That's how the mind works. It places things inside a box that is of a manageable size and can be seen according to a three-dimensional reality. So, while the focus may be on the heart in this project and the mind on another, the real focus is on the integration of the two into a harmonious expression of the virtuous heart and mind through the human instrument into the worlds of time-space, which is here and now. And it's Earth in the year 2008, in the month of April, on the fifth day, in the 14th hour, in the 22nd minute, in the 12th second of time. I'm making some of this up, of course, but my point is that even when you have limited yourself into thinking that here and now is literally here and now, just as I defined it, it isn't. There is no time or space that bounds your expression of the virtuous qualities within you. They are outside of that box, as big as time-space here and now is. But I understand the difficulty in making that distinction. All that's really important is to know that when you transmit your love-centered life into your local universe, you are touching more than your local universe, and you are not locked inside the here and now, but can transmit into all time and even non-time.
Uh-huh. So I see our discussion is starting to touch on time travel. You know from the amount of email I forward to you that time travel is one of the more common themes, I'll say. Not certainly in the top five or six or whatever, but it's probably in the top, you know, 10 or so. In the Wingmaker's materials, time travel is discussed in some detail in the ancient Arrow Project book, for those of you who haven't read all of the material or looked at the book at least. And there it's described as a technology called BST, or Blank Slate Technology. Do you want to shed any light on this topic?
Not particularly. Not at this time. And it's not that I don't find the topic interesting. But the energetics of our conversation will be better served if we stay on a different wavelength.
Okay, I understand.
You see, time-space is an invention of the mind to allow us to navigate into three-dimensional reality. Something that is invented by the mind can always be influenced by the higher consciousness of the spirit, as it is encompassing of the mind. So as spirit beings, we time travel all the time. The kind of time travel that was described in the Wingmaker's material, it has more to do with institutionalized time travel and bringing it within the domain of human technology. There are many projects that have experimented with time travel, and I merely disclosed one such project in the Ancient Tarot book. But it's a very, very complex subject when you begin to institutionalize time travel.
James, do you want to take a break yet?
Yes, it would be good to stretch our legs, but I'd like to make one final point before we end this session.
Okay, that's fine.
One moment. We're all members of a single organism, much like individual photons compose a beam of light, or trillions of electrons compose an electrical current that sweeps across a galaxy. When we move from the world of phenomena to the higher dimensions of reality, individuality is exchanged for community. And this community is vast and encompassing, and it contains an intelligence that mirrors its vastness. In the times ahead, there will be shifting sands and creeping doubts, and many people will feel fears trying to grasp them. I remind anyone who is open-minded to the possibility that you are here at this time to give your love independent of the external world conditions and events. It's the foundation of event temples to help organize these quantum communities so that we can collectively stand as examples of love-based communities living amidst fear-based individuals and easing the fear and guilt and hate and base survival and ignorance and greed energies that will be emitted in the coming years as the birth pangs of a new earth are released. I understand it's very easy to fall prey to these fear-based energies and want to protect yourselves and loved ones and prepare for tumultuous times to, in effect, to crawl inside a protective cocoon and wait for the chaos to pass. But the times, as hard as they may become, will be made easier for all in the broader community of humanity and Earth if those of us who came to this planet at this time fully awaken to our missions of receiving and transmitting love frequencies into our local universe, knowing well that the walls of our local universe extend to the most distant and ancient walls of our Creator's universe. They are truly one and the same. And what we send out to one goes to all. It circulates amongst the greater community and stabilizes it amid any turmoil. So it is our responsibility to own this time as makers of peace from war, creators of love from turmoil, changers of darkness to light, and transformers of despair to hope. If any of you question your mission or purpose, remember it is this. How you clothe your mission in terms of your work or hobbies or family or relationships, well, this is up to you. And in the wide sense of reality, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you express a love-centered life into your local universe independent of external circumstance. You place this at the core of your human existence, knowing that if you do so, you are a stabilizing force. And of all the forces that are needed at this time, this is the most vital.
Yeah, you know, I get this, at least intellectually, but the doing of it's another thing. I mean, maybe this is too extreme of an example, but if there are food shortages and rioting in the street breaks out, or the economy really, you know, like goes into meltdown, or, you know, how do we remain as stable forces? I mean, wouldn't it be natural to get kind of caught up in the chaos since it affects us? And I think it'd be very hard to remain in the heart or express a love-centered life in the midst of this kind of chaos, at least.
I'm not predicting there'll be chaos, though it's a possibility. Much of the catastrophic events that were possible components of the birth pangs of Earth have been mitigated already, as enough people are on the planet to stabilize it. This, by the way, is a significant reason for what some people would call overpopulation. In reality, it requires a very large human population on the planet to get a stabilizing force, energetically speaking. to entrain a higher order field on the planet. Yes, the difficulty you speak of is true. If there were riots in the street, or the internet shut down for a few days, or if government suddenly announced extraterrestrials are indeed real, these kinds of events would have profound implications to our social order. It would be like turning it upside down for a while, and in this state of disorder, it'd be hard to think, act, and express outside of the social reaction, especially with the media fanning the flames of fear and apprehension. And yet, this is precisely what you will be asked to do. Whenever you feel your ability to radiate the love-centered life is in jeopardy or diminishment, you need only to call on your higher self to replenish it, to tap into the reservoir of love and compassion that surrounds you at all times.
Yeah. You know, James, how does one call on the higher self or tap into this reservoir you speak of? Is there a technique you recommend?
It's a fair question, but there are no formulas in this regard, Mark, or at least not ones that, in my view, are effective. Let me answer you this way. If the people of our world knew only the condition of sleep, it would be logical that they would then fear the dawn. The people would wonder, what is this strange light that awakens us? This is the time when spirit is victorious over the forces of materialization, and it will emerge with a calm supremacy that's the signature of its source. And this emergence is like the dawn, as light falls over our world and stirs people awake. Sometimes this light will stir turmoil and unrest, but this is only because people have been asleep for so long that they fear the changes that this light brings, as they know, at a deeper level, that these changes are profound and lasting and carry with them a responsibility that they themselves must adopt or be left behind, in a sense. Those who are truly awake, they'll see these tumultuous times as demonstrations of this light, and it will not evoke survival instincts or run and hide tactics of despair. And they'll feel a new power that comes to them unbidden, in the sense that they don't call for it consciously, but it will flow over them nonetheless, like a new current of energy, and they will anchor it, share it, and experience it like never before. You see, I could give you this technique or that, but in the end, it's really just a string of words. Instead, what I've shared is the spirit behind the words, the force behind the object. And this, in my opinion, is more valuable. So listen, if you want, to this spirit force, as it will inform you and keep you focused on the mission that you came to be part of and to achieve as a collective intelligence. I think that's enough for this session, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, no, I understand.
Yes, let's stretch our legs and refresh ourselves a bit.
Okay, signing off. We'll pick up on session 3, and, well, it doesn't matter to you listening because it's all there's no time pause, but for your sake, James, we'll start in about another 10, 15 minutes, okay?
No, that's fine, Mark.